Yo, 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 yo. Welcome to the Vulcanite Radio Podcast. This is Artis. No Ladnar. None of that other stuff. Just Artis right here on Vulcanite Radio Podcast. And we're going to pay homage tonight to the album that I produced with the illustrious Jeffrey Kane on Communicating Vessels, Drapetomania. So, I guess the number one thing is that why in the bleep am I doing this? Right? I know people probably sitting there like, oh man, this dude's gone. Sit here and talk about himself for an hour. Well, I'm going to talk about myself some. I just really kind of just want to open up about some of the things I'm thankful for, some of the people that have helped along the way, and not even really like a real help. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like just being there sometimes and providing some inspiration and some belief in the stuff that, you know, that I believe in and things that I like to do. But I always thought, and this is the worst part about this whole thing. I always thought, and it's so self-centered of me, and I can admit this is very self-centered of me too. I always thought that someone at radio or newspaper or publication or, you know, I always thought somebody would want to ask me about Drapetomania. I produced it along with Jeffrey Kane. Jeffrey Kane, of course, is, you know, just the greatest label owner, friend, musician that anybody could have. And we're going to talk about how I met Jeffrey and how all that stuff played out a little during this Drapetomania podcast on Vulcanite Radio. No Ladnar, this is Artis, the rapper, producer, Artis from the Green Seat. But I self-centered, I always thought somebody was going to interview me and want to talk about how this record was made because, you know, this is also a little self-centered and a little bleep hole of me to say this, but I'm the only hip-hop producer to ever produce a record with Jeffrey Kane, meaning Jeffrey was at 90% of our recording sessions. I mean, he was there. He played guitar on Drapetomania. He was right there with us every step of the way making our record. I mean, you know, there were no call-ins. There were no, hey, how are you guys doing down there? He always came by. If he wasn't going to stay all night, he at least came by, stuck his head in. He was there throughout the entire process. So, of course, without question, big shout out to Jeffrey Kane. Big shout out to Jim Fay, because Jim Fay is the person that introduced me to Jeffrey Kane. And this is kind of off the subject because I guess I need to tell you what we're going to do. We're going to talk about Drapetomania. I'm just going to do like a little series, and I'm doing it on myself, and I'm doing it on my group. You know, it's kind of like the interview I did with Supreme. It's just for the history books. It's just so that the record, not that the record needs to be set straight, but there's just some stuff that only I know about this record. Other people can tell you about things, how things happened later, you know, later in the process, but only I can tell you about how it started from the beginning. And so we're going to break down some of these songs. I'm probably not going to be able to find some of the original, because I've got so many records. Like, if anybody ever came to my house, before I became the producer that I am today, if you'd come to my house 10, 12 years ago, I didn't have this many records. And definitely 20 years ago, I definitely didn't have this many records. But now I have so many records that now it's going to take me a minute to go through them. But the sequences and the way these tracks were done, I've got all those. I've got basically everything. So, we're going to break down each of the songs. We're going to talk about the samples. It's going to talk about how it all came together, the recording and all of that of Drapetomania. And maybe at some point we'll have some other members from TGS on this podcast so we can kind of talk about some of the, you know, such just some of the other things that happened during the process. But I'm just going to give you guys this. And you might not even want an entryway. You probably don't even want to hear this stuff. You know what I'm saying? But I just want to talk about it because I just want to. It was something that was never done. Nobody ever want to talk to me about this record. And it probably says a lot about me other than, you know, some media. You know, we had some foreign media, like some guys from Seattle and some college guy from Clemson and Arizona State Radio. You know, I mean, we had some people and big out to Sunez because Sunez wrote a glowing review of Drapetomania. You know, and when somebody from New York writes something like that and has listened to hip hop their whole life and they write the way they wrote about Drapetomania, it was a big deal for us. But anyway, nobody ever wanted to ask me about it, so now we're going to talk about it. But let's quickly talk about how I met Jeffrey Kane. You know, I'm always a fan of Remy Zero, always a fan of the sound and the songwriting and just everything around Remy Zero. So, but the interesting thing, I was never told that it was Jeffrey Kane in the beginning. Jim Fay, it was Dilla Day. I don't think it was actually Dilla Day, but it was a Dilla Day celebration. It was down at Plum. I don't know if y'all know where Plum Bar is, but, you know, down near Old French Quarter, you know, on the north side of First Avenue, kind of in between First and Second. It was Dilla Day, and we were all there chilling or whatever. And, rewind for a minute. Earlier in the day, Jim called me and he was like, "Hey man, you going to Dilla Day or whatever down at Plum?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm going. You know, we'll be there." And he's like, "Hey, because I want you to meet my partner. He's starting a record label, blah 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 blah." You know, and like I said, big shout out to Jim, because without Jim, without the relationship that I had formed with Jim and the relationship with Teen Getaway and, you know, playing shows in Montevallo and being friends, like, without that, I don't know. I mean, I might still be here, might still be working with Jeffrey, but it might not have happened when it happened. So, I get down there, and I get there a little late, and Jim's gone, and so is his partner. So, he never told me who the partner was or whatever. Until much later, where we were out at South by Southwest, and of course we were out at South by Southwest because of a lot of the help that local community had given us: Bottle Tree, Lobotomix, Travis Morgan over at Sky Bucket, and you know, forgive me if I'm leaving anybody off, but just the local community had come together and had, you know, we'd thrown some shows and we'd raised some money and they were able to pay for us to, you know, to get out to Austin. And then that's when I finally met Jeffrey, and, you know, we'll talk a little later about some of the conversations that Jeffrey and I had while we were out at Austin. It just kind of enlightened me about the business and that sort of thing. But we're gonna have plenty of time to talk about a lot of this stuff, just because, and hopefully Jeffrey will come on. I had tried to get Jeffrey to come on to Vocal Night at some point just to talk, but maybe I can convince him this time, since we're talking about this great album that he helped me produce. But anyway, let's move on. The album opens with an intro that was done by Elizabeth, who is Sanders Boelke's wife. That's her voice that you hear in the beginning, in the intro on the very first track. And so what we did with that first track was that we took Kyle Ginther, big up to Kyle, was the engineer. He lives in Nashville, from Nashville. You know, he was, and what was so funny about Kyle was driving down, and he was working all day with, like, Duquette and Armand over at Old Pipe and Gun. Now, I don't know how many of y'all know where the Old Pipe and Gun was, Pipe and Gun Studios, but it was over in Homewood, and we recorded at Pipe and Gun some over there with Kyle, and we recorded at Isidore South. Shout out to Daryl Thorpe, because Daryl Thorpe calls it Isidore South, over at Jeffrey Studio in Mountain Brook. And Kyle was splitting time, and man, he was working his ass off, driving down, staying the week. I don't know who he was staying with, but you know, I think he'd stay with Jim Faye some, and stay with friends and stuff while he was here, and he was working like crazy. So, what was I saying? Oh, we see, this is so self-centered, I'm going to forget and probably just, like, keep talking over myself and repeating myself. But anyway, that first track, we created, like, a little smorgasbord of all the sounds and stuff, like, sounds that weren't used, us cracking up in the booth, and it was all the stuff that Kyle had saved while we were, and most of the stuff he saved was the stuff over at Pipe and Gun, because there were times we were over in Homewood, we'd be there all night. I mean, I'm talking about, like, till 4 in the morning. And then Kyle would, like, go and try to get some sleep, or maybe sometimes he'd go to with us to the plaza. We used to like to go to the plaza after recording and stay out there all night or whatever, stay till the sun came up. And so we created that on that first track. It's just a bunch of random sounds. And of course, I don't have all those things, because I think Jeffrey and Kyle kind of put that whole little thing together. But then right after that, Elizabeth it gives us the intro part that you hear there on the first track that's called Intro. And big ups to Elizabeth Bulkey for doing that for us. And another reason why, and I guess I need to kind of revisit this too, another reason why I'm doing this is because I heard a great interview done with Lior Cohen a couple weeks ago, and I thought this, I mean, if so much of this interview was so interesting, it was so it was Bob Lefsetz did the interview, and you know, for people that like Bob Lefsetz, that interview people, important people like Lior Cohen and managers, I think he even interviewed Logic's manager and some other stuff on his podcast, you really get some real insight, because Bob is genuinely interested. And sometimes I think that in this world, you kind of have to reach a certain plateau of success before people are genuinely interested, because people aren't really genuinely interested in, you know, local guys, hip hop group. Other than those guys, shout out to the guys from BMR. Local MASH, they did a great interview with Shaheed and Supreme, where you could tell they had actually listened to their album. They were taking notes. They were genuinely interested about each individual track. I even think they played each individual track off the EP of theirs. So you don't run into that much. You know, I mean, the couple of radio interviews we've done, you know what I'm saying? I mean, they talk briefly about, but most of it's about whoever the host is. They're trying to, you know, play up to their audience or whatever. So they're not genuinely interested, but you could tell Bob was genuinely interested. And so who else better to be interested about my work but me? So this makes this even more of a huge, like, you know, this is some self-gratification stuff going on right here for sure. But so here's the other thing. I don't think people know genuinely, like, you know, how I work or how TGS works, how the Green Seat works. And so much of how we begin starts here at my studio where I'm recording this podcast for you guys right now. Most everything starts right here. And generally nobody else is involved in this process. It's not that I don't want anybody else involved with this process. It's just that sometimes I just crawl out of bed at 2 a.m. and get started on something. And so unless, you know, Complete and big shout out to Complete, Jeff C and FX, unless they lived here, they wouldn't, you know, I mean, some of these ideas aren't just going to come, you know, while everybody's just hanging out together. Now, a lot of the additional stuff that we add, of course, does, you know, but, you know, in the beginning stages, it all starts here at my place here in Pell City, Alabama, not Birmingham. And that might be a surprise to a lot of people, but I live in Pell City. I don't live in Birmingham. I couldn't live in Birmingham because I would never get anything done. I would never be organized. I would constantly be out hanging out with my friends, hanging out, drinking, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So I live in Pell City. All the pre-production, all the early stuff is all done here, and nobody else is involved in this process. Nobody but Artiste, just sitting right here. And so let's talk about Jude Law, because Jude Law is the second track. Jude Law is really the track that most people know, most people like. And this podcast is brought to you by Glimmerangie. They didn't pay to be on this podcast, but I'm having a nice little scotch whiskey here. Let me have a sip before we talk about Jude Law. Hold on 1 second. So, Jude Law, how Jude Law came about did involve Complete and I. And I think Complete and I and FX, we were at Bottle Tree, and somebody got us mixed up with the uber popular group G-Side from Huntsville. At the time, of course, G-Side was the heir apparent to Outkast. You know, they were getting write-ups, and I mean, they were a pretty big deal. And I could, I mean, maybe I can kind of see how he would get us mixed up. I mean, they're G-Side. We're the Green Seed. I mean, you know, if he wasn't paying attention, I guess he saw the G and the S, and, you know, he immediately made it out to be that we're G-Side. So he alluded to that. And so we got a little, you know, we thought it was funny, but Complete and I immediately thought, you know, of the Jude Law, Ewan McGregor, you know, the fact that people, you know, we kind of joshed around, and people probably get Jude Law and Ewan McGregor mixed up all the time, too. You know, two British guys, you know, popular, been in a lot of movies, that sort of thing. So we decided we were going to write a song to honor the fact that if we had to pick, we'd rather be Jude Law, I guess. I guess we'd rather be Jude Law. After a little time, I kind of feel like maybe we need to rethink that. We probably should have called this track Ewan McGregor, but J-Law, I mean, you got Jennifer Lawrence now, so we could actually just call this track J-Law. We probably should change it in iTunes and call it J-Law, but anyway, that's how the song came about. And so after that conversation, I immediately, when I got home, I started crate digging, and I'm a crate digger. I never sample from YouTube. I never sample from CDs. I want the crackle. I want the pop. I want it from straight from a piece of vinyl when I sample. And I found a Buddy Rich record in the thrift store over in Centerpoint, and they've actually got some, well, I don't know about now, but this was way back, pretty good selection. Sometimes this just depends when you go in there and whose house has been, you know, raided or whatever, who had to get rid of some records. So I found this Buddy Rich record, and let me get to the MPC here, because what I did, I went ahead and I didn't load any of the I didn't load any of the drum stuff. I probably should. Let's see what the... Yeah. Okay. For now, we'll just deal with the sample, and then we'll add the drum stuff and the bass line and all that. Because it's really not... I mean, let's just get real here for a second. In terms of musicality or, you know... I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to do hip-hop stuff. Like, let's quit. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, especially when you're sampling, let's quit with the, oh, he's a genius. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, Dilla may be a genius just because of the way he was chopping, and this was before Ableton and all that stuff. So he had... He literally had, you know, sample time was reduced. He didn't have a whole lot of sample time. So he was actually being really creative with the piece of work, the piece of equipment that he had at his disposal, and created some of the great, I mean, you know, some of those tracks for you, that you hear from Dilla, you can't even make out what the, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can hear the real record and go listen to his version of it, you can't make it out. So, you know, I'm not a genius or anything with the way that Drapetomania was put together, because there are samples. The way I sample is different than other hip hop producers, but it ain't a whole lot different. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we're still working with somebody else's stuff, and so you just find a way to flip it the way you want to. But you know, I'm of the opinion now is that until we hip-hop producers, you know, stop sampling and start creating, you know, start learning how to play some instruments and, you know, and that sort of thing. I mean, I play instruments. I play just about everything. I'm not world-class by any means, but, you know, at some point when we get ready to want to break out of this box, we're going to have to, you know, gonna have to pick up a real instrument. So this isn't genius level stuff or anything. It's just like you take a Buddy Rich record and you start looking for stuff, you know, you start dropping the needle on stuff. So what I found was, I think the first thing I found was this right here. So this I pulled from another record, and of course I can't remember it. And of course in this MPC, it's like you always name stuff in the MPC really short, because it's like you're trying to get to the creative part. And so with the MPC, you don't have a keyboard. You know, like people with Ableton, and of course I use Ableton some, you know. But people with Ableton, when they get ready to say something, they just stick their hands on there and they type up a whole thing. And you can keep the workflow is so much different with Ableton and with Logic. You know, I use Logic some. I've actually got everything. I use a machine, Native Instruments stuff. I use just about every sequencing production machine, just because I want to know how they all kind of work. I don't want to ever just kind of get stuck with one thing, kind of, you know. So I named this RCA, and I guess if I was guessing, I would say I probably named it RCA because of it was a record from RCA. I don't know where it came from or not, but so anyway, we had this. Those group of samples there. Let's see if there's anything else. Well, yeah, there's one right there. And so, what I imagine is, because I'm imagining here, because I don't even know which one of these samples was even hit. Because it's like when I put them on here, I stagger them. I don't line them up or put them in any specific place, because I'm always trying to like the workflow. I just want to get the workflow going as quickly as possible. So one of these is used, or two of them in sequence are used together. Those sounds right there from somewhere, and I just don't know where they are or where they came from. Oh, maybe it's that one. All right, Randall, let's just stop being a dodo and let's just play it back here. And let me mute this one here. And let's see. Okay. Yeah, so it's just one, and it's looping every measure on the one, you know? And I, you know, and I guess I'm just trying to get myself started before I put hats. Because, of course, this was on the this was on the front end of this. So it was the first, it was the actual first sample that I dropped into the MPC when I started working here. So, So this Buddy Rich record had to been on a record, on one of his RCA records, because this other sample where the horn samples from Jude Law are, they're on this other program, and I named it RCA2. How lazy is that, right? How super duper lazy is that? And so RCA2. Yeah, so, okay. So, everybody knows, if you've heard the song, this is the main part of the loop here. And I took that part of the loop. Those are three separate sections there. It's not one loop from one song. It's multiple chops from one sample. So that one is part of that, but I didn't use that one. I didn't use that one either. I used this one in one other iteration of this beat, but I eventually got rid of it and used this as the intro line. And I didn't sequence this. I hand played this right here, this one right here. Okay, and so that's not a loop either. That's three chops from multiple places. That's why I wish I had the original, and maybe I'll have it for the next stage of this podcast. But this is one chop. So it's okay, and then I've got it chopped up into two, though. So this first one goes, because I wanted to play it in rhythm, and I wanted it to be kind of off rhythm a little bit, because I don't, you know, I can say this too. I didn't come up with this because any of us that know Dilla, you can listen to Dilla's stuff. He doesn't quantize anything. And so the minute somebody told me Madlib and J Dilla don't quantize, I ain't quantizing. I ain't quantized since, I mean, probably 2003. I ain't quantized no hats, no drums, nothing. Not since I heard that. When I heard Madlib and Dilla don't quantize, that's it. So I've had this one, and then I've got that one on another, that one. And so I hit it multiple times. So in another iteration of this, I went, you know, so it's just like sometimes you could just go overboard with the. You know, you could really go crazy with it if you wanted to. But I went for simple because I felt like this was just an introduction to who we were as a hip hop group. So, and then it goes right into that, you know, the loop that you know if you've ever heard the song. And, oh yeah, so that's the same loop. So it's one chop. That's by itself. That's on one pad. That's on pad three. And then pad four that's by itself. And then I just looped that part. And it's in 5/8. So, excuse me, 6/8. So it's 2, 3, 4. Because that first one is off a little bit. It's because the chop. And I hand played that too. I hand played it, no quantize, nothing. And so once we get to Jeffrey's to start recording for this track, and of course the track was produced months, maybe even a year before the actual recording process. But once we get there, I realized that I didn't want it to just be this. Like, you know, I just didn't want it to start like that. And that's when I came up with this other chop to go. Yeah, a reprieve for you. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I hit the wrong card. A reprieve for you, new school, junior league. You're coming truthfully, it's who I used to be. Who is Lee? They summon ways, some adjust. Others go with past the dust. Rookie Bruce is looking more like Quacky Ducks. Pack it up, maybe packing it up. Arrested development, master intelligence. Pedestrians asking for pellets. They take a flash to the melon. You need more, you're asking for Kellen. I don't know where outside is, fight below. Maybe Idaho or deep inside a Maury Povich psycho. The numbingly predictable question they says in these. He's prepared me for my deep sleep. Take your time, perfection is wait and see. Erasing your face and taking relief. You'll make it shortly. Your waking table is squeezed when making papers achieved. And so we went with that. And so as we were recording it, I thought, you know what? His complete verse should come in right after it. So not only do I produce it, I normally arrange it also. I'm always trying to go ahead and get everything organized before we get there. And in this process, typically, in most cases, Complete and I record the verses together, sometimes separate, but for the most part, together we record the verses. And most of the time, if I get the track soon enough, I'll send it to him. This is just how the process works. I produce it. I kind of get a rough draft of how I think it should feel. I give it to him. He writes to it. You know, takes him however long, you know, sometimes it takes him a week, sometimes it takes him a day, you know, I mean, it's just like sometimes a month, just whatever, you know, just however he's being moved to do it. And so then we get in the studio, we record the verses, and then after that, we kind of play off of each other where maybe we come up with some silly stuff while we're in there. Maybe we want to add some stuff, some ad libs, because, you know, with this track, he does some of my ad libs, and I do some of my own, and then I do some of his, and he does some of his own. So, I mean, I guess that's it, man. It's just like this, and of course, this was recorded. This record was recorded like back in 2011, like end of 2011, into 2012, and I mean, it was great. It was fun. I mean, every bit as fun as we're having now recording our new record, and it's almost finished, and the process was really the same, you know. I make the beats, I write the choruses for the most part, you know. There's been a couple tracks where Complete will write the verse, I mean the chorus, but for the most part, like probably 90% of the time, I write the choruses. And I write my verse and I produce the track. And I think there's one more thing I want to talk about, because I mean, this thing has actually gone a lot longer than I thought it was going to go already. But, we recorded to tape. We went to Pro Tools and then we recorded to tape because, you know, Jeffrey wanted to test some rock and roll theories with a hip-hop record, you know, and a lot of our favorite hip-hop records were recorded to tape, so it's not like we were doing anything, you know, that was, but I don't think that Jeffrey had ever recorded a hip-hop group, number one, and then number two, he was trying to see the limits of tape and what the difference was, and it gave it a different warmth, it gave it a different feel, and yeah, it's not like an 808 heavy bait, you know, I mean, it's a typical boom-bap kind of record, you know. I didn't go to any strange lengths to try to boost the low end, because I mean there were times where I felt like maybe the low end should be higher, you know, be more boomier, but I was really just going with everything. I didn't want to make waves. I didn't want to make a big deal about anything. I really was happy to be in the studio with somebody as talented as Jeffrey, and just in there working on a record. Like, you know, like I didn't want to ever say anything that made it feel like I was not, you know, just happy and not appreciative of everything that this man had done up until that point, And now, even now, the things that he's done for us, I mean, I want to continue to stay grateful. You know, yeah, do you have some moments where you get impatient and you might feel like, oh, man, like this ain't happening the way that I want it? Yeah, you probably feel like that. I mean, what human being, I mean, every human being wants their way, you know, but sometimes you don't get your way and you have to be a man about it and just eat it. You know what I'm saying? And so with this process, I was definitely appreciative and grateful. And man, I was just eating it up and loving and soaking up as much as I could soak up, because a lot of the stuff that I learned and soaked up has actually helped me do our new record and getting it prepared for y'all. And hopefully you'll like it. But I'm going to stop rambling, man. That's Jude Law. That's kind of sums it up. If you got any questions, you got any other little tidbits of information you want to know, just hit us up on Instagram, hit us up on Facebook, whatever. You know, just let us know what you want to hear. And I appreciate y'all just hanging around and listening for a minute. You know what I'm saying? So this is the end of the Drapetomania. Oh, man, we're going to get it. You really could get crazy with it if you wanted to. All right, signing off, Artiste. We'll be back, man. We're gonna do the whole record. Just gonna talk about all the crazy stuff and fun stories and stuff from Drapetomania. Peace.